everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, the bird bass were, well, they were frozen.
The birds were wearing their ice skates?
They were wearing their ice skates. Not a thick layer of ice, but, you know, it was there, the little layer of...
Well, give it time. Yes. I would think over the weekend you'll have a better chance of thicker ice.
Yeah, well, I think we've got 5 or 6 days where we've got to keep the plants covered. That's a bit unusual, having a little bit of a cold snap here. It is Thursday, January the 19th, 2023. It's the Buckmaster Show. As we now transition into our 13th year this month with our radio broadcast in Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media Complex, which continues to grow. There are 4 stations now here under roof at KVOI's Bustos Media Campus. 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we've archived very conveniently for you all 12 years of our programs, give or take a few, but most of them are there. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The former United States Surgeon General is Dr. Richard Carmona, Senior Advisor on Public Health Emergency Preparedness, leading a statewide effort to boost vaccine and public health awareness in Arizona. Dr. Carmona is a Distinguished Laureate Professor of Public Health, Health Promotion Sciences, and Community Environment and Policy at the Zuckerman College of Public Health. Dr. Carmona served as the 17th U.S. Surgeon General from 2002 to 2006. In the spring of 2020, UA President Dr. Robert Robbins named Dr. Carmona as a key advisor to Dr. Robbins on the COVID-19 migration and reentry effort. A one-time U.S. Senate candidate, Dr. Carmona began his medical career as an Army Special Forces medic in 1967. He is a combat Vietnam veteran, highly decorated, quite a few awards and decorations, including the Bronze Star and the Combat Medic badge. Dr. Carmona has also had a very successful law enforcement career connected to the Pima County Sheriff's Department for about 35 years. Dr. Carmona, always a pleasure to see you. I could take up the full half hour just talking about your resume, but I don't want to do it.
Well, Bill, thank you for not doing that. And it's a pleasure to be with you again, Bill.
Well, it's always great to see you. Here we are, the 3-year anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic. Technically, you could say next month is when things really went south in this country, but the signs certainly were there in January of 2020.
Yes, Bill, that's correct. Beginning in December of 2019, we started getting information from China that there were some problems. Shortly thereafter, in January, February, the first cases hit the Northwest because of travel, and that began our pandemic, our association with the pandemic in the United States.
What's your view, the 30,000-foot view of the past 3 years? Why don't we begin with what have we learned about COVID-19?
I think there are some good lessons that we've learned. One, not different than any other pathogens in our society, that virus wants to live in our world just like we want to live, and it will continue to transform, or what we call mutate, and change its characteristics so that it will try and defy anything that we put to block it, to kill it, to remove it. So when you hear about the mutations or variants that occur, they are evolving to prevent themselves from dying because of what we're doing, whatever it happens to be. The antivirals, medications, antibiotics don't work with the virus. So the virus is trying to stay alive, and we have plenty of history as it relates to viruses, like polio as an example. When you and I were children, and Sabin and Salk came up with the vaccine, every mother stood on a line and begged to get their children done because they saw the horrific pictures of children in iron lungs and dying and paralyzed. And so there was a big push to get all the children vaccinated. And over the years, and today especially, you see, polio is rarely ever encountered in the United States or in developed worlds. There's still cases out there because the virus is still alive, but it has nowhere to go because people are immunized. And that's what we need to achieve with COVID, that we get to what's called herd immunity, that most of the community is vaccinated, the virus has no place to go.
How much are we? Would you figure maybe at least 90% of the American public have some kind of either through shots or immunity from getting COVID?
The best guess is we're up about 3/4 of our population that have been immunized and or infected and have some passive immunity. But what we've learned from the virus, too, that the immunity is not long-lasting, which is why we have had to do boosters. So scientists are still looking at methods of being able to provide a single shot, for instance, every year, like a flu shot. And in fact, some of the research being done now is just that. Could we, in the regular flu shot annually, include protection against COVID? Because you have multiple flu strains every year that you deal with as well. So that's the research that's going on today, Bill.
Why is there this percentage, and I don't know if maybe it's 20%, of people who say they have not had COVID? And they may have had it, but not know it. But generally, there is this group that seems to have evaded the COVID-19 virus.
Bill, I think you're correct, and there's a great deal of study in that small population who seem to be protected, although they have not been immunized. Now, there's a caveat there. As high as 40% to 50% of people could be infected and be asymptomatic, meaning they don't get sick. They feel okay. Or they have a little runny nose and they ignore it. So unless you do sophisticated tests, you can't differentiate those. But your point is very well taken, but we have to be able to identify the whole population. We know today that probably most everybody in the United States has been exposed at one time or another because
sure.
It's hard not to
of
be.
Of course, of course.
And some of those have done fine.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it that some people are better protected than others? Well, that's the innate humanness of all of us, that we're all different. We have different immune responses based on what we've been exposed to throughout our lifetime. So if you could find what that was, it might be something that you could make a drug out of or make a treatment, but we don't know that yet. So now the best things that we can do are to continue to study the virus genetically as it changes, identify those changes, and be able to develop countermeasures against it.
So the Omicron family seems here to stay. Is that good news?
Well,
news in that maybe this will be kind of what we're dealing with now in the future, going forward.
As long as there are hosts, meaning people that can be infected not only in our country but all over the world because people travel, and this disease came from China originally,
mm-hmm.
The virus will continue to replicate because the virus needs your body to make new viruses. So it comes and attaches to your metabolism, to your cells, and steals all of those nutrients and makes a new cell. So it will continue to change and create different variants until such time that we have most of the population that's been immunized or exposed and has immunity, and then the virus has less places to go or no places, and then it has no place then to replicate and change and create new variants. That's the hope, and that's what we talk about when we use the term herd immunity,
mm-hmm.
that the greater part of the population is covered.
But COVID is not going to go away.
No, like polio hasn't gone away. It's out there, but it has no place to go because the majority of people are vaccinated.
Public confidence is once again waning in the vaccines. And one of the jobs that you were tasked with Governor Ducey in 2021, try to get the word out about vaccines.
Yes.
How successful have you been?
Well, we've had many meetings. I've gone to town halls, both statewide and nationally, with AARP and other organizations that represent different populations. I've had personal discussions with physician groups as well as professional and academic groups to try and get that word out. So I think it's made a difference. It's been a mighty effort to have press conferences and public service announcements that we've done to try and inspire people to get vaccinated. And what we're up against is they're also inundated with bad information.
It's all over the web.
Yeah, you know, and there's all these conspiracy theories
mm-hmm,
that this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you see it every day.
Yeah.
And yet there's no validity, but it undermines the confidence in our health professionals telling you, get vaccinated. okay? We vaccinate our children when they go to school to prevent measles, mumps, rubella, whooping cough, because those are vaccinatable diseases. We don't see polio in the world almost rarely anymore because vaccinations. Bill, you could argue that vaccines may be the greatest scientific advancement in the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about the plagues in the Middle Ages and things.
Yeah.
Those are gone now.
Yeah.
You know, and so the point is vaccines are good. Vaccines have minimal risk when done correctly. And most of this erroneous information that's being disseminated, that's confusing people, is actually detracting from the health of our nation.
The tragedy here, Dr. Richard Carmona, is that once again, the true science is being obscured beneath the politics and the country's growing division.
It is. And Bill, you know, the bigger picture, as we've spoken about before, is this idea of the challenges of what I framed as the challenges of democracy, the right of the individual versus the collective right of society. Yes, you have a right to refuse a vaccine. And of course, in schools, vaccines are mandated, except if you have a religious preference or otherwise, and you can back out. Majority of people have their children vaccinated. But the challenge, of course, is when you make an exception like that and say, well, I'm not going to get vaccinated, you not only place yourself at risk, you place the rest of the population at risk. So one of the challenges of a democracy is, how do you adjudicate the right of the individual versus the collective right of society to be safe and secure?
More with Dr. Richard Carmona after we take a break. Let's talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They're open right now, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. We love Mona's. Check out their website, monasdanishbakery.com, and you will see pretty much everything on the menu. They open at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock in the morning. On Sunday, they are taking Monday off. Great place to stop in the morning for breakfast, but the lunches are terrific as well. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. We'll be back with Dr. Richard Carmona right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Everything you can imagine for your garden on their 13-acre site. Open daily in their 53rd year. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com, their sister business. Beautiful handcrafted merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Another one of our great sponsors, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive, so much to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and just hanging out in historic Silver City. Visit their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for all the information about how to recreate and where to stay. Some great places to stay and great places to dine in. Our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, will welcome you with open arms. And we always welcome with open arms Dr. Richard Carmona, coming back to the Buckmaster Show, the 17th U.S. Surgeon General of the United States from 2002 to 2006. Dr. Carmona, how are we doing with COVID cases here in Pima County?
Well, the absolute numbers are down, but our seven-day weekly average is about 368 new cases. We're seeing less hospitalizations and less death, mostly because so many more people are immunized now and following good public health practices. You still see people at risk in crowded areas with masks. We have three-quarters or so of our people fully immunized. We have many people who have been infected and have some immunity. So overall, we're not seeing the catastrophic consequences we saw the first year, but there's still the virus circulating, mutating, and spreading, as I said, with 368 case average, 7-day average. All time, though, since this started, we've had 312,000 cases in Pima County and 4,216 deaths as of today. So somewhat refutes the early political differences where we were told that this was going to go away when it got warm and everything was fine.
We've had 3 years where it got warm.
it's very significant. And, you know, you can argue how it was handled. You can argue about mistakes that were made. But make no mistake, this was a very, very potentially lethal disease and one that has caused catastrophic consequences, not only in death and disability, but workforce. People are tired. They are suffering from COVID exhaustion. It's hard to find health professionals that want to get into the mix right now because of the stress of a job where ICUs have been full, where there weren't enough nurses, where we have to hire nurses from other states to come in to help us.
A lot of people left the profession.
Yes, they did.
Couldn't. They said
big
that's
exodus.
It, they're done.
Yes.
A lot of nurses, doctors too. You know, large segments of the public were alienated right from the beginning. They didn't like this way or the highway approach.
Right.
And you pointed out earlier, listen, we live in a society, it's a free will society.
Yes.
People make choices.
Yes.
They have to live with those choices. Mm-hmm.
It's so, Bill, and again, a lot of these more controversial, sometimes caustic, divisive issues center upon the rights of the individual in a democracy versus the collective rights of society. You know, smoking is one.
Yes.
Okay, you have a right to smoke, okay? But if you're smoking and you're in a room with a pregnant lady and you're a guy,
mm-hmm.
or children that are healthy, they're smoking too.
Mm-hmm.
It has deleterious effects on the fetus, deleterious effects on the children. So how do you balance that? That is, protecting the rights of an individual to do something, but at the cost it brings to society at large.
In 2006, you released a landmark report on secondhand smoke. Where are we today in that area?
We're doing better. If I give you just a quick look, after the Second World War, almost half the nation was smoking. As we come up now...
We were told it relaxes you.
Well, you know, in fact, when I was a young soldier in Vietnam, with our rations, we would receive a mini pack of cigarettes that we were told was to make us relax in combat. Actually, what it was doing was addicting you to the nicotine so that you'd smoke when you came home. But if we look at that half-century arc, right now we're down to less than 15% of Americans smoking. So more and more we're seeing less smoking. The younger generations are rejecting smoking. However, they've kind of, you know, there's still people that are vaping, using e-cigarettes and things like that. So we've made progress, but we still have a ways to go.
Secondhand smoke with marijuana.
Well, marijuana is interesting. It's become quite complex because we have two buckets to look at. One is recreational marijuana and one is medicinal marijuana. And then under medicinal, there are separate buckets. For instance, if you take the CBD, which is the cannabidiol, out of the marijuana, which is the active part, it's been shown that it has certain medical properties. For instance, anti-inflammatory. In one case, a drug has been approved now by FDA to treat children with resistant seizures.
Wow.
So there seems to be a benefit.
Yeah.
But there's also THC, which is the hallucinogen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the scientific data, smoking marijuana has very serious long-term deleterious effects, depending on how often and how long you use it. But especially in youngsters where the brain is still developing.
What about driving and smoking marijuana?
Same as drinking, impaired drive. You know, it impairs your ability to have the appropriate judgment, to act accordingly to speed or an obstacle in the road. And of course, if you are stopped and you're driving poorly and you fail a field sobriety test, you can be arrested or cited just as if you were drinking because you're impaired. And that impairment actually affects the safety of society, even though it's your right to smoke this. Again, right of the individual versus the collective right of society.
Do you see the day where marijuana will be pretty much legal in this country?
It's moving in that direction mm-hmm. right now. A lot of it is driven politically, economically, mm-hmm. and then less so medically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are reasons to consider its use now. There's a lot of more research going on now with psychedelics like THC and other psychedelics to see can they help in brain issues.
What does marijuana do to a young person's brain?
Well, I would first, I'll answer it quickly, but
okay.
For anybody that's interested, you know, you should go to the NIH, National Institute of Addiction, Dr. Nora Volkow, world's expert on these things. And there's unbiased information online that is generated by your National Institutes of Health who will cite all of the problems in development of the young brain, neural networks not forming, impairing your thought capability, all of those things. And in some cases, maybe even leading to mental health problems. Now, everybody isn't the same. You'll always hear exceptions that somebody's done it for years and it's fine. But I think that we're still learning a lot about this. And yet, when you look at the CBD, it looks like there is some medicinal benefit for its use appropriately. Mm. When you look at THC, hallucinogenic, there's a whole new study now, area on hallucinogenics, the old LSD from when we
mm-hmm,
were kids,
mm-hmm.
now looking at it a different way, that can it help with PTSD or mental health problems?
Mm.
That's ongoing research.
Now we have fentanyl. What's your take on that?
Well, fentanyl is a narcotic. It's 100 times more potent than morphine.
100 times.
And so if used correctly in an operating room with an anesthesiologist, pain management, fentanyl is fine. But when used indiscriminately as a drug of addiction, you see what's happening in the streets. We have many, many fentanyl deaths on a daily basis.
How do we approach that issue? I mean, it's so readily available.
Well, it's another drug that is hit the market because there is a demand, and we have a lot coming from Mexico. We have a lot coming from other states. There's a big market, and as long as there's demand, it will continue to be provided, and we'll continue to have this problem. Like, for instance, now we have regular classes in first aid that include the use of Narcan, the antidote to
mm-hmm,
fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
And just about every patient that comes in an emergency room that is unconscious or unresponsive, they're probably going to give them fentanyl because
mm-hmm.
they don't know if they have a narcotic
mm-hmm.
overdose,
mm-hmm.
you know. So they'll give them Narcan, I mean, to to stop the effect of the fentanyl.
Getting back to COVID, was it a huge mistake for China to try to go their own way with their own particular vaccine that they had developed?
Yeah, I think that the
quarantine thing just didn't work.
Well, that's where I was just going to go, Bill. There's many aspects to China. First and foremost, it started in Wuhan, China.
Yes.
The debate is still there. Was it accidental? Was it a spill in a laboratory? Yeah. Was it a bat that flew in from a cave in a rural area that put droppings on one of their open markets? But because of their unwillingness to open the doors to the full research, there's still a lot of conjecture on our side as to what really happened. The second part is they shut down their country and said, okay, we're not going to have the disease spread. Everybody stay home. Well, on the surface, that looks good. But once you pull the plug and say, all right, everybody now could go back to work, well, those people aren't immunized. So now you're seeing a huge surge of diseases there and an evolution of viruses as well. And it's concentrated because they have 1.4 billion people in the country, four times the size of the United States. So the unanticipated consequence of their policy is that they have their own epidemic now. And the danger is all of those people can travel. They can go to other countries and they can assist in spreading the disease further and giving more opportunity for the virus to continue to mutate.
All right, Dr. Richard Carmona, always a pleasure having you on the show. We'll look forward to our next visit with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Stay
Bill.
Healthy. Okay.
You too, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Our Sun Corridor Inc. CEO series talking about True Simple. That's next after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
It's time for the CEO interview series on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Sun Corridor Inc., a transformative economic development organization representing one of the most dynamic and growing major business centers in North America. Sun Corridor Inc. is a CEO-driven regional alliance whose members aggressively champion mega-regional issues that impact economic competitiveness and quality of life. The organization has helped to drive significant business investment into the Tucson and Southern Arizona region through primary job creation, resulting in an economic impact of more than $3.2 billion, with 195 company locates and expansions, supporting nearly 55,000 jobs. For more information, visit suncorridorinc.com.
And joining us now on the live line, Chang Liu, the Vice President and Chief Executive Officer of Two Simple, which on December 22nd, 2021, made history by becoming the world's first to operate a fully autonomous semi-truck run on open public roads without a human on board while naturally interacting with other motorists. Chang Liu was named the first president and CEO or chief, chief financial officer in 2018. He returned to the position in November of last year. Mr. Liu, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Bill. Great to be on. And thank you for having me.
Well, so many questions I have, and I know our listeners are very interested about this, too. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of Two Simple. I know you're headquartered in San Diego. There is, of course, a Tucson connection. But how did all of this begin, sir?
Thank you. Yes. So Two Simple, a little background. We are a technology company. We leverage our advanced software, artificial intelligence technology. We work with partners around the hardware ecosystem, OEMs, tier ones, and we're here to solve the biggest challenges that's facing the truck freight industry today. The company was founded in 2015. We have today about 1,000 plus employees. And we do have a large presence in Tucson. It's where all of our testing facilities and maintenance. And so as a listener or as a resident of Tucson on the I-10, you likely see our vehicles, our trucks, our Class A vehicles up and down, collecting data, doing tests day in and day out.
Well, it is a huge industry, the global truck freight business. I just heard a report today that this business grows every year. There's a shortage of truck drivers. There's even a shortage right now, I understand, in truck stops. They're becoming so full that truckers sometimes drive around for hours, Mr. Liu, trying to find a place so they can stop and rest and overnight. I mean, this is a huge market, and I just wonder how far along are we to actually seeing more autonomous driving on the highway?
Sure. Yeah, and maybe to begin, I'll frame the market and the challenges. As you mentioned, I mean, there's a shortage of not only truck drivers, but space and truck stops. I mean, it's the size of the market in the U.S. As a consumer, 80% of all the things we consume are moved by a Class A truck. I mean, we drive on highway, we see a lot of trucks go by. And a lot of times we don't notice them, but really they're moving almost everything that we consume. There's about 2.5 million Class A trucks. Every year, it's about $800 billion market. So literally, it's one of the largest industries out there. And it's also an industry that's facing, the largest problem the industry is facing is this mismatch between the demand and supply of freight capacity. What that means is demand, as you pointed out, is us as consumers, we're using more e-commerce, we're consuming more. And so there's an additional demand for goods. And the supply of freight capacity really is bottlenecked by the driver shortage, as well as the cost of safety, the cost of environmental issues. Now, how do you solve this problem? we have to basically try to automate where we can. Just given, again, there's a natural driver shortage in this industry. And so to kind of answer your question about where we are in terms of development, we're the first company to focus solely on Class 8 trucks. We've had a really track record of being first in this industry in terms of, as you mentioned, to start the show, to show that technology can work on a public road. It was 80 miles from Tucson, a stop in Tucson, to another stop in Phoenix. Again, this is a very typical of long-haul application where the Class 8 trucks deliver goods. It was public highways, and we were to show that this truck can drive by itself without a human on board. Now, that was a pilot program done a year ago. And the next step is to increase the reliability in terms of the number of runs we can do, as well as where we can have these autonomous runs. And so that's, as a company, we're working very hard towards.
Well, of course, people think of safety, Mr. Liu. The semis are large, they're heavy vehicles, and people want to know that, hey, there's nobody in the cab of the truck. How do I know that these are going to be safe vehicles? I think that's kind of the big question that the public wants to know.
Absolutely. I mean, it's top of mind for everything we do. Safety really has to be at the core. I mean, these are, as you said, large trucks that's interacting with other human drivers. And so in terms of the technology, the way we design it, implement it, as well as operations, it's focused on safety. You know, every year there's 500,000 incidents in the U.S. alone that involves large trucks. I think the vast majority, based on study, are caused by human error. And oftentimes, you know, as a truck driver, look, you're on the road 11 hours a day, day in, day out, sometimes obviously at very odd hours at night, and fatigue does set in. I mean, I recently drove this is just a few hours, and I was tired, right? And that's only one day out of the whole year. Our technology is designed such that we use a wider range of sensors, all of the latest technology, so cameras, laser, so LIDARs, light emitting detection, conventional radars, GPS, all sorts of sensors that gives us a nearly a 360-degree view of our surroundings. Our cameras in the front can see up to 1,000 meters. So, you know, we're not only looking at the vehicles right in front of the truck, but literally 10 vehicles in front of that truck, right, to see if there's movement or behaviors that might increase our caution. Obviously, it's the sensors capture, our algorithms, our software is able to properly label, detect, and then make the most safe plan. We're making, you know, thousands of permutations every second, or to figure out what is the right safest path for the truck to operate. As a computer, it never gets tired, it never fatigues. So the technology is designed such that certainly the perception, the planning, I mean, it's always optimizing for the most safe. Same time, operations. The way we launch these vehicles, we're starting small. It's not nationwide. It's really one freight route at a time so that we can perfect the operational side of supporting autonomous vehicles. That includes what you do.
Let me ask you a quick, this is kind of an obvious question. The truck's autonomous. What about when you need to stop for fuel? What happens then?
Great question. Yeah, we get asked that a lot. One interesting fact, I didn't know this until I joined industry. You know, one Class A truck filled to the max can get you about at 1,500 miles.
Wow.
Per gallon. So in theory, you could actually get from
per tank 1,500 per tank.
Sorry, I apologize. Per tank, and so I mean, there's a lot you can do within that, and. And we do have sort of partners that have fuel stations where you have a protocol and the truck on the side of the highway can pull over by itself, and we'll have a human operator fill in the gas, right? We can also have gas, what do you call it, the fuelers that come to our base of operations and fuel the trucks. But again, with the nice thing about trucking is that these are fixed routes, are predictable routes, right? There's always a schedule. And so, and given that a truck can operate almost 1,500 miles per tank, we can plan accordingly and make sure that, you know, the truck is not running out of gas while it's driving.
All right, we're going to pause right here. I've got so many more questions for you, including the future of Too Simple in Arizona. And why was Arizona chosen to be one of your bases here in the Tucson area? Those questions for Chang Liu right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we continue now with our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor, Inc. We're speaking with Chang Lou, who is the vice president and chief executive officer of Too Simple, based in San Diego, a global autonomous driving technology company with a major operation here in the Tucson area. A couple of questions for you, Mr. Lou, about Tucson. Why was Tucson chosen for this as a test center? And I understand there were some challenges with the facility. Recently saw a workforce reduction. So I wonder about the future of Too Simple here in Southern Arizona.
Yeah. We initially chose Arizona and Tucson because one of the regulatory environment here, it's actually very progressive and supportive of next generation technology like autonomous driving, and as well as the ability to test our vehicles on public roads. We picked Tucson specifically. The local government's been great, very supportive. We have partners like the Sun Corridor that has really been super helpful. And so overall, Tucson and Arizona has played a vital role in our success, and we're very grateful to be part of this region. You mentioned that there was a recent workforce reduction. I would categorize that as, look, the last few years, every technology company probably grew too fast, right? It was a good market. The capital was easy to come by, and we grew. And given the current macro economic environment, we do have to rationalize how we spend and where we spend in terms of the workforce, and really focus on the highest priority projects, as you can imagine. But at a whole, in terms of future Tucson for Too Simple, we're actually doubling down on Tucson. We built this really brand new facility that's next to our old building that came online last year. We're down at Old Vale, exit 273 on I-10, and it's beautiful, and it's convenient. It's got everything we need. There's great talent in Tucson. There's more and more talent in Tucson, and we are creating. I like to think that we're creating some meaningful and high-paying jobs in the region.
What I know that your trucks are equipped with the latest hardware and software. What do you envision over the next couple of years happening here in Tucson with this program?
Yeah, we are still in the development phase. And so you're not going to see 1,000 trucks, 10,000 trucks kind of populating the roads in Tucson with self-driving. They're all driverless. It's a very careful, pragmatic approach to development and to validate and verify this technology. We understand, of course, also the perception of it and the public acceptance. So we're going to do that with a lot of caution and planning. And so you'll see that there'll be continued testing of these vehicles. Now, as technology gets more robust, more safe, better, we do like to ultimately take the driver out on some of these vehicles and conduct commercial freight runs along from Tucson to Phoenix. But again, it's a very measured and gradual process over the next few years.
Is Pima Community College helping you as well with your workforce development?
Yeah. We do have a partnership with Pima. We actually are the first company that the autonomous driving technology company that started a program at a local college to help train truck drivers to deal with autonomy in the future. Right. And with any technology, there's going to be new skill sets, high-paying skill sets that's required to operate this technology. And so we wanted to kind of start that community outreach and training today.
So you have returned to the role of CEO. What does this restructuring look like? And I understand there's going to be a renewed focus on research and development in the company.
That's right. So I took a small break in between last year, and I came back in November. It's always focused on technology and research and development. I think the market conditions last year, plus some of our own internal challenges, caused us to be not as stable as we hoped. We had to kind of get ourselves back on track. And so the priorities for me are we have to improve our corporate governance, our management stability, which we've done. As I mentioned, invest the capital that we do have on the highest return on investment issues. So obviously progressing our level 4 self-driving technology is the key part. And then to continue to expand the great partners that we have, because ultimately to get a self-driving truck on the road, it's possible. We develop the software, but of course there's hardware partners, there's regulatory partners, and stakeholders. So to continue to build those partnerships, and that's something that we've done a really good job, I believe, in the past, and we just have to continue to do so with our and Tucson being a very important part of that ecosystem.
What about you personally? Why did you get involved in this area? Did you ever envision yourself you'd be working with autonomous trucking?
That was not something I dreamed of growing up, I would say. Astronaut / self-driving trucks, those were not, two things. It's sort of, I would say, luck, life. The opportunity for this is incredible. The societal value that we can bring with this technology is meaningful because of the safety improvements, helping consumers have lower cost transportation and freight delivery. I think the next 30 years, 40 years, really this area is going to be huge. It was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up.
Getting back to why you chose, why Too Simple chose Southern Arizona, how instrumental was Sun Corridor, Inc. and the economic developers here in convincing you all to set up shop here?
It was important, and I would just say in general, I think there's a really good focus in Tucson and in overall Arizona to attract companies to come here. And when we came here, what also surprised me, and this is outside of work, is how amazing the food is, actually. that was an added bonus. Great local beers too, and so. Certainly the great right choice, and we're enjoying our presence in Tucson.
So we'll see more of the trucks on the road, you think, here in the next year or so?
Absolutely, yes.
Do you normally work like the freeways, or are you doing residential streets as well? I mean, what does the footprint look like?
Our use case is the long haul mm-hmm. freight delivery. So you're not going to see any trucks near schools, homes, residential areas. Okay. This is highway. I mean, the hardest job for a truck driver today, or drive from Dallas to Tucson, right? It's probably longer than 10 hours. But that's a mundane job with very few sort of interactions with pedestrians. And that's the work that we want to be able to automate, right? We'll allow drivers then to do more local deliveries where there's a lot more personal touch to them. Like, these are things that a computer just can't do.
Right.
Going from a Walmart distribution center to a Walmart retail store. Again, these are more quicker stops, more human touch because you're dropping off goods and certain things.
Okay. We're going to have to run there and leave it there. Chang Liu, thank you very much, and good luck with Too Simple and your operation here in Tucson. I appreciate it very much.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, Bill.
Thanks a lot. And for more information about Sun Corridor, we urge everybody to check out the website, suncorridorinc.com. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, have a great afternoon, everybody.